Welcome to the Big Blue Big Board podcast. I am Dan Pizzuta, joined here by Chris Flum, and we are coming to you heading into week 14 of the NFL regular season. We are just after the college regular season, so we have bowl games coming up, a lot of, as we talk about the draft, some Senior Bowl things are going to start coming out, so we're really starting to get into draft season. And as we look at the Giants right now and where they stand, they are currently 4-8. They sit 7th in the draft order currently, but that is absolutely up in the air because right now there are 5 teams at 4-8, including the Giants. There are another 2 teams right now, Green Bay and Cleveland, who are 4-7-1. So there's a lot of movement that can be done between all of those teams from now till the end of the NFL regular season. The Giants now, though, only have a 14.2% chance of a top 5 pick per Football Outsiders, and a 0.1% chance of the top pick. Those were much higher just a week ago. So as the Giants are starting to pick up these wins, that is, you know, good for them, but also that draft position starting to drop down. So for today's positional preview, we're diving back into those again. We are going to look at cornerback, which is going to be possibly something the Giants need to look at in adding some pieces. They already got rid of Eli Apple. We don't know what the status of Janoris Jenkins is. So this is a position in the secondary that is going to have to be looked at some point in this offseason. So you ready to talk about some cornerbacks, Chris?
Oh, absolutely. And I think we pretty much have to start with, what do the Giants have now? Are they in a decent spot going forward, or are they going to have to invest some serious resources in that?
Right. It's probably is. We'll see where Janoris Jenkins fits in. Right now, he's the number one guy. You might think that he will be on the roster in 2019 because he was not one of the players traded right before the deadline. Eli Apple, who we already mentioned, was traded. So he clearly was not seen as someone who was going to be an integral part of the roster going forward. But Jenkins still on the team. He has a $14.75 million cap hit next season per over the cap. The Giants could save about $7.75 million on the cap if they let him go. But like we talked about in previous episodes, you let a guy like that go, you now have to pay or invest draft capital to replace him. So it's certainly possible that Jenkins is part of the roster next year. And when we go down and look at what's behind him, I think that's when the Giants really start to get into the questions. B.W. Webb, who has impressed at times, but
I'm not sure if you can feel comfortable with him as one of your starting corners. Personally, I feel better about him as more of a 3 or 4.
Yeah, he's a guy that the Giants weren't really banking on being in this position as right now the number 2 corner. He kind of partly worked his way up. He started as the slot corner, and then once Apple got traded, he's been more on the outside, so he has turned into the number 2 kind of out of necessity. He's not consistently overwhelmed, but yeah, he's not a guy where you're going to feel good with him being the number 2, and also he's only on a 1-year deal at $790,000, so it's not like the Giants made a big investment in him. And he's going to be 29, so we'll see how they feel about him, especially because they have some young guys who can be stepping up. We'll start with Grant Haley. We talk about Grant Haley a lot on this podcast. I am a big fan of Grant Haley. He's, you know, a smaller guy. He's working in the slot more often now. He was promoted to the active roster after the Eli Apple trade. He's gotten a lot more time to play after Apple was traded and that slot corner position opened up after Webb was moved out to the outside. And he has played really well in the time he has gotten.
Oh, definitely. I think I said about our last podcast, he has played way better than anyone would have any right to expect from an undrafted free agent, even one who probably should have been drafted if he was maybe an inch or two taller and a hundredth of a second faster on the 40. But he has played really well, and he looks like he could be a guy they can count on, maybe not to be a primary starter, but at least a major contributor going forward.
Absolutely seems like someone the Giants like right now, and he's getting the playing time, so I would have a hard time not fitting him into the picture at next season as they try to figure out what this cornerback rotation is going to be. And then really the last guy they have, and is someone who is easy to forget because he hasn't played this year, is Sam Beal, who they took in the third round of the supplemental draft. So that means the Giants do not have a third round pick in the upcoming draft because it was used on Beal. So basically you can think of Sam Beal as this year's third round pick. And I think he is someone who is going to be good once the supplemental draft was starting to happen. And it looked like Beal could be a possibility for the Giants. I looked into him. He's someone I liked as a player, probably someone who has talent higher than what the third round a pick was. They got a discount, I think, because he was in the supplemental draft. I think he probably would have gotten higher than that if he were to have either come out in the draft last year or were to come out this year. So he is a guy I think the Giants obviously like to have put in a bid on him in the supplemental draft. So he is absolutely going to be someone who also plays a role going forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think if he had played this year, he could have been in the second round in the 2019 draft, maybe even pushed for a maybe fringe first consideration. I think he's got really smooth hips, really quick feet. I saw one really impressive play from him watching him before the supplemental draft where he was in coverage and the receiver tried to use the referee as kind of a natural pick play, and Beal just kind of danced around him and got right back in coverage. It was really impressive. I'm just a little bit worried about his thickness. He's a real lanky guy. I'm not sure if he has the strength to deal with some of the bigger wide receivers in the NFL, and with the shoulder injury, I'm not sure how far behind he might be in getting up to that NFL strength level.
That's clearly something the Giants will probably work on with him. Obviously, since he did have a shoulder injury, if he's trying to, you know, build some strength in the upper body, that is going to be a little harder to do in the time he was off. But he did have he does have a full season to recover. But he's a guy who does have good length. He's 6'1", and he does have some ball skills. He played wide receiver his freshman year at Western Michigan, and then he went over to the defensive side of the ball, and he showed off those ball skills. He had 8 passes defensed as a sophomore in 2016. He had 10 in 2017, along with 2 interceptions. So he is a guy, like we've talked about in previous episodes, of what you're looking for in a modern defensive back is a guy who can play the ball, because those turnovers are going to be how you stop modern offenses. So in that skill set, he has what the Giants should be looking for.
Oh, definitely. And you know, the Giants do have some things they look for. I know we've both gone back and looked, and they have a definite physical archetype for cornerbacks. Both James Betcher in Arizona and just the Giants historically.
Yeah, so they like guys. I think this is kind of how the corner has been going physically lately, is they like guys who are taller. They like those guys over 6 foot, and they like guys on top of that with long arms. When you look at the corners that Dave Gettleman drafted in Carolina, that was James Bradbury. He was the 81st percentile in height. He had 96th percentile in arm length. The same thing went for Darryl Worley. And then you look at a guy like, the Cardinals didn't draft a lot of corners while James Betcher was a defensive coordinator, and they kind of didn't always have a great second corner next to Patrick Peterson, but they drafted Brandon Williams in 2016. He was only 48th percentile in height, but he had 86th percentile in arm length. So they're going to look at guys who have those long arms who can make plays on the ball. And even if you're smaller, you can get those arms in there to make a play on the ball. Those measurements are things we'll officially see once we get to the Senior Bowl and the Combine and those guys actually get measured. So we can fit these guys a little better into what these decision makers are going to be looking for. But for now, we can just kind of look at what we see on tape and some of the numbers, and we can see how they mesh there.
Oh, definitely. And there's also scheme fit to consider. Few teams anymore just play a straight man scheme or a straight zone scheme. Yeah, everybody kind of mixes and matches. More and more teams are starting to run like a hybrid coverage scheme where if you happen to have a cornerback who is good at man coverage and a cornerback who is good at zone coverage, you'll play zone coverage with the zone corner and man coverage with the man coverage and kind of use that to play to both players' strengths while also giving the offense some different things to look at. However, we have seen that James Betcher does prefer man coverage and usually a tighter man coverage when they have the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, he's, as we've seen, especially as the defense, the Giants defense is right now, they are going to try to throw a lot of guys at the line of scrimmage in that front seven. So that usually leaves corners out on an island that has one safety back right now. So that is going to put a lot of responsibility there. So if you're looking at these corners, you're going to want some guys who are able to handle that type of one-on-one responsibility. And if we jump into these guys, I think the number one guy on probably almost every list is going to be Greedy Williams of LSU, and he is absolutely a guy who should be able to fit into that type of scheme.
Oh, absolutely. Watching him, he kind of reminds me a little bit of DRC. He's got that real long, again, lanky but not skinny build. He can kind of play at the catch point. He can play around and through receivers without interfering with them. He's plenty athletic to play in tight man coverage. He can turn and run with receivers. He's got real quick feet, smooth hips, so he can stay in his back pedal for as long as possible and then just get out and stay right in a receiver's hip pocket. He's probably the guy who is worthy of a top 10 pick.
Yeah, and he's a guy that just plays the coverage real well. He does not let receivers get the best of him very often. And some of his numbers are down when you look at, if you look at some of the corners, if you are looking at tackle numbers, do not worry about that. Greedy Williams only has 28 tackles, but that is good. That means
going elsewhere.
Yeah, either the ball is going elsewhere or the ball is not being completed. But when corners have high tackle numbers, you kind of worry there because that means the ball is getting completed in front of them and they need to make a tackle. When they don't need to make a tackle, that is when they're doing their best job. So he had 2 interceptions this year and 9 pass breakups, and those are a little down, but also because he's not getting thrown at as often.
Yet the games I watched, teams generally avoided whatever side of the field he was on, because when he was in coverage, it was tight coverage. He did not leave much air for the ball to find a receiver.
And that is something you kind of have to watch for, and you can look at once we get a little further down the line and we get some more advanced numbers here, we can look at the amount of times these guys were targeted. That also is a quality metric to see how often these guys were thrown at, and that's something we'll dive into a little deeper once we get further down into the process. I think if there's someone who could possibly be an outside chance as someone who overtakes Greedy Williams as the number one corner on some people's boards, I think that might be Byron Murphy of Washington. Would that be fair to say, this early?
Yeah, I think it would be. Depending on how the two of them test, that always plays a role. If Murphy surprises with his testing and, say, Williams disappoints, or depending on how what team needs a cornerback when. Personally, I think Murphy might be best in a zone scheme just because he's a little bit of an undersized guy, but he is really quick, has really good awareness, and can he's pretty much always a threat to make a play if he's in coverage on somebody.
Yeah, and I feel like he's kind of a guy who doesn't even need to be in coverage to make a play. I mean, he's a smaller guy. He's much smaller than Greedy Williams, 5'11", but still listed at 182. Williams is 184. But Murphy is a guy who is just going to make a play wherever I think there needs to be a play made. So he had 4 interceptions and 13 pass breakups, but he also had 4 run stuffs, and that includes 4 tackles for loss. So he's a guy who, if the play is not coming towards him, he is someone who is able to charge up and force himself to make a play, which is something you like to see out of corners.
Oh, definitely. And Washington has been producing quite a few really talented defensive backs lately. Rapp, their safety figure, he was pretty high on our list when we looked at the safety position not too long ago. And Murphy's going to be high on a lot of boards. He might even wind up being like a almost like a Janoris Jenkins type at the next level.
Yeah, guys who can make plays on the ball are going to be the premium, I think, as we go forward looking at what matters for cornerbacks. So let's go over to one place. You talk about how Washington has been able to produce some good defensive backs. I think Penn State is right there. Not always the place you think of for corners. Usually you think of linebackers when you think of Penn State. But I mean, you got Grant Haley on the Giants right now. And Amani Oruwariye is a guy who I think is a lot of NFL teams are going to like.
Yeah, right now I actually have him number 2. On my watch list, mostly because of how well he fits the Giants' physical archetype. He's big, long, athletic, flexible, quick, you know, all of those things. And personally, I want to know what the hell is going on in Penn State's strength and conditioning program, because they're just churning out ridiculous athletes just by the bucket load. Had, what, 3 or 4 guys last year, including Saquon, who just broke the combine. Amani, he's going to test really well. And he's also a guy who's got that scheme versatility that modern defenses like. He can play zone, he can play man, he can make plays on the ball. So his is going to be an interesting name to watch going forward, I think.
Yep, listen, it's 6'1", 203. 3 interceptions, 12 pass breakups last year, and a forced fumble. You know, 2 tackles for loss, which came in the run game. They were 2 run stuffs. So, yeah, he is a guy who is going to hold up well in coverage. He has that big frame. At 203, he's, you know, the heaviest guy we'll talk about today. So he is a guy who is not going to be bullied very often by wide receivers, and someone who at that frame can still run with them. So when you can put those two together, that's how you would try to build a cornerback.
The one slightly weird thing about him is that he's played in 35 games, but I believe he only has 1 season of starting experience. So it took him a while. You know, it took him until his redshirt senior year this past year to actually get on the field as a starter. So I think teams are going to want to investigate that. And if it was just a depth chart thing, that's one thing, but it is something to look into.
Those are things that NFL teams are going to dig into as they get more information on these guys. So if we move along, I think one other guy who's going to be considered a playmaker, but maybe he's on the smaller side of these guys, is going to be DeAndre Baker of Georgia. He's listed at 5'11", 185, but 2 tackles for loss. He had 2 interceptions, 9 pass breakups, but I don't even think those numbers really show how well he played this year.
Yeah, he is He was a big reason why Georgia's defense has been so good, not just this year, but last year. A really scheme versatile corner. He can play man. He can play zone. He's got a really high football IQ, and he recognizes patterns and route concepts really well. Watching a bit of tape of him this morning, I believe it was the Rose Bowl last year, Oklahoma ran a mesh concept. He was in man coverage on Marquise Brown, which is not an easy ask of anybody. And he adapted to the mesh concept on the fly and got himself back in pretty good position, all things considered, especially considering mesh concept is a definite man coverage beater. Brown still made the play, but that's just because he's ridiculous.
Yeah, he's just a guy, whenever you're watching Georgia on a defense full of dudes worthy of standing out, he is a guy that has consistently stood out this year. But then if we move along, I think one guy who really stood out in a defense and is someone who has absolutely made plays all over the place and maybe to more of an extent than really anyone we talked about is Bryce Hall of Virginia. So just going through his numbers, 3.5 tackles for loss. He had 2 sacks. He's the only cornerback we'll talk about today who had 1 sack this year, and he had 2 of them. He had 2 interceptions, 20 pass breakups, and 2 forced fumbles. So he's the guy just all over the field at pretty much every point.
Yeah, and he is... Cornerbacks tend to be competitive by nature, but he's got some bulldog in him. He will fight at the catch point with anybody. He's another one of those little bit bigger cornerbacks. I saw him listed at 6'1", about 200 pounds. He's got the athleticism, I think, to play in man coverage. I'm not quite sure about consistently in tight press man, but definitely man and off man. He can live there. And those pass breakup numbers are just, that says it all about him, really.
Yeah, those 20 passes defense, that led college football. He was at 20. The next guy was at 17. And below that was the couple of guys at 16. You look at some of these other guys, like Byron Murphy's 13 was tied for 15th. So there's a big gap there. So he's a guy who is just able to play the ball all the time. And I'm just going to continue repeating it. Looking for guys who can play the ball and make plays on the ball. That is the skill that NFL teams are going to be looking for as they try to combat modern NFL offenses going forward.
Yeah, most defenses are not going to be able to just stop most offenses cold. They're basically going to have to stop them by either taking the ball away or breaking up passes at the last second. And that's something Hall excels at.
Yep. Yeah, it is. So I think that alone, I think, is going to boost someone like him. That's going to boost his stock. I think the last guy we'll break down here is Michael Jackson of Miami.
Yep. I think we can already safely say Odell Beckham's favorite player in this draft. Physically, he's a lot like Hall, and he's also been something of a playmaker for Miami. But personally, I'm not quite sure if he's got the quickness to be in man coverage all the time. He might be more of a Richard Sherman-style cover 3 corner.
There are defenses that are going to use that type of corner, so being in that type of scheme is not going to necessarily hurt his stock. But yeah, he is a guy who can make plays. He has 3.5 tackles for loss. Sorry, I lied before when I said no one else we were talking about was going to have a sack. Jackson actually had 2.5 sacks this year, but he did not have an interception. He had 5 passes defensed. So as we look at what he is, he's going to be a guy who has shown he can make plays in front of him. I think when you look at what he can do in coverage, maybe there's a few more questions there, because he wasn't as big of a playmaker when the ball was thrown at him, but he was someone who was able to make tackles and behind the line of scrimmage and was effective on the blitz when he was sent.
Yeah. Which are positive traits for a bigger zone corner. Yeah. They're guys you want going down and driving on the football using their football IQ and maybe not necessarily preventing plays from being attempted, but going and busting them up as they're being completed.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are things that are all going to be taken account and put together and fit into a profile, and you figure out how you can use these types of players. And I think we'll get into bigger discussions of drafting strategy and players, but I think teams should look at these players and figure out what they do well and how they can use that, rather than how do these people fit into what we do. I think the best coaches in the league will figure out what these players do well and how they can implement that, instead of trying to potentially fit the square peg into round hole, which I think still a lot of coaches do. So we'll see that with all of these guys, especially at corner, when the coverage scheme is so much about whether it's man or zone or off or press and all of those different things. So we'll see how these guys are going to fit and how coaches think they can translate into what they want to do. So Hall is going to be the last guy we really dive into. One more guy I just want to briefly bring up, who I think we'll take a deeper look into and I think should rise up some boards, is Rakia Sin of Temple. Guy 6'2", 190, 12 pass breakups, 2 interceptions. Guy was always making a play on the outside for Temple. I mean, someone I was very much enjoyed watching while I watched Temple games this year. So I think he's someone who is going to be rising up some draft boards. Outside of that, we don't really have any college recommendations for you, but I would say go watch Army-Navy this week because that is the game.
Yeah, the only game on. That game does have a lot of history and tradition. It's usually a pretty fun game to watch. Not much from the scouting perspective, but go ahead and watch it.
Yeah,
great way to spend a Saturday.
Yeah, just a fun college football game. So that will do it for us today. You can subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and review if you have not. That helps us greatly. Please read our work at bigblueview.com. You can follow Big Blue View on Twitter at Big Blue View. Follow Big Blue View on Instagram at big_blue_view. Follow me on Twitter at Dan Pizzuta. Follow Chris on Twitter at RaptorMKII. We will be back on Monday breaking down whatever happened when the Giants head down to Washington to face the mighty Mark Sanchez. So thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you again soon.
Hey everybody, it's Neil Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge. I host a podcast every week called The Vergecast with my friends Paul Miller and Dieter Bohn. We've got a rotating cast of characters from our entire site, which is about technology, how it impacts culture, and how that is all a big cycle that causes us to have a wide variety of feelings that you can listen to every Friday. We've done over 300 episodes in the 6 years since The Verge has been around, but you only need to listen to one, the latest one, to get caught up on everything in tech news. Vergecast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere else you listen to podcasts. Check it out.